I watched Purple Rain for the first time last week.
What?
Yeah.
Ever?
Ever.
Were you alive in 1984? Well, I was alive in 1984, and I also didn't see Purple Rain then, but I mean, come on, man.
Yeah, look, if you had seen Purple Rain in 1984, you would have, like, that would have changed my entire life, probably. I would have been walking around with a cane, and look, I don't think I fully understood what Purple Rain was.
Yeah, hang on. What did you think it was before we get to what it actually is?
Did you ever see U2's Rattle and Hum?
I have not.
So it's a concert movie, and there's, like, okay. I assumed it was, like, a concerts where there were, like, little skits. Maybe the concerts were in the story, but there were, like, little skits between that kind of connected the concert bits to each other.
Well, it is a concert film of after a fashion. You got part of it right, but
yeah, I mean, it's a movie. Yeah, it's a good ass movie.
It is. Yes. I mean, look, there's a certain amount of cheese involved, or melodrama, let's say. I think melodrama is maybe the word.
It's a product of the time.
Yeah, it's, well, I think it probably, you know, it reflects Prince's personality, right? Like, it's weird because, like, he cultivated such an air of, like, mystique and distance, you know, like he was always this, like, kind of unreachable figure.
Yeah.
But then all the stories you hear about him behind the scenes, just hanging out with people, he's like a giant goofball.
Yeah. And, like, it's super dramatic and kind of really intense for, like, a rock and roll movie.
Yes, it does. The stuff with the father toward the end does get, like, pretty hardcore.
Well, the father and the mother, and, like, him hitting, I guess we're going to do light spoilers for a 30 or 40 year old movie now, but, like, he hits his girlfriend, and, like, there's all this other stuff.
Oh no. Oh gosh. I forgot about that part.
Yeah. Like it's brutally honest about for a movie that opens with, yo, this is loosely autobiographical. It's pretty unflinching in a way that I wasn't expecting. And also, it's like him saying goodbye to his youthful friends and like moving forward with the revolution. I don't know, man. It's a good movie.
Also, Morris Day and the Time.
Fucking Morris Day and the Time. there was a moment that I was really taken by, where he's like walking down the street and he goes under this bridge. And on one hand, on the left side, there's graffiti that's just written in black spray paint, just like plain ass black letters that says music. And on the right side, it says God. And I was like, if I had seen this in the 80s, I wouldn't have understood this message. But now I get it, man.
Yes.
He's walking between two worlds.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Symbolism.
Yeah. Yeah. Symbolism, man.
Also the concert, the performance scenes, just.
Oh, yeah.
Unlike anything else.
I mean, the other thing you'd forgotten is, like, that kind of, like, that early 80s time, there was a period where, like, the synchronized dancing a la the Drifters in the 60s moving forward, still people were doing in a way that, like, became a boy band thing just after this, I guess.
Sure. Kind of. Yeah. I get what you're saying. I mean, like, he's very much coming out of, like, the like James Brown and, like, funk. And,
yeah.
I mean, that's what I love about Prince so much, is he's such a fusion of, like rock and funk and R&B and like that era of performance. With the James Brown style stage moves. Yeah, it's a good time. Did you know that the album cut of Purple Rain is just a live performance at a show?
Like the main release of Purple Rain?
Yes, the
is
cut
live?
On the album. Like, no, I don't even mean live in the studio, because, like, you know, like, you know, a lot of bands will just, you know, track each part separately and mix it after the fact.
Yeah,
but
of course.
Sometimes they'll just record live together in the studio. I don't even mean that. I mean, like, it's literally from a show they played in Minneapolis.
Wow.
It's that tight. Like, that is the level of musicianship.
Yeah, it's an incredible movie. It was not all I was expecting. I thoroughly enjoyed it, and I thought of you as I was watching it. So.
Oh, well, thank you. It's a great time. It's a great time. I hope this podcast. Okay, well, hold on. I'm not going to compare this episode of this podcast to Purple Rain.
No.
If the forthcoming episode is even 1/10 billionth as enjoyable as Purple Rain, then I think we have done our jobs.
Welcome to Brad and Will Made a Tech Pod. I'm Will.
I'm Brad.
How you doing, Brad?
I'm doing well. I didn't think to ask you before we started recording if you set up the audio cue for this episode.
I did not. I completely forgot about that.
Oh, boy. Oh, but let's see. Okay, hang on. Should I just start Googling? Okay, we're gonna need a ding. We're gonna need a positive sound and a negative sound.
Okay, so, like, Price is Right fail horn? I can do that just with my phone into the microphone.
That might be a little trite at this point. I love that thing. Don't get me wrong.
Wow.
It's a little bit overused.
Really?
At this point.
Does it come up that often for you? It doesn't come up that often for me.
I think if you're trying to like.
Oh, okay. Okay. How about this one?
That's not bad. Okay. All right. That's a pretty deep cut. I was thinking like a basketball game, like shot clock buzzer, like a something
like that. Oh yeah. Okay. I don't have one of those.
We need a positive sound, a negative sound. I was thinking like a hotel lobby bell ding for the good one.
Like the one that if you screw it down too hard, it doesn't actually ding. There's no resonance. You're talking about the classic silver chrome. Yeah. It's an audio podcast. They can't see you whack your hand down like that.
I'm just verifying with you. I've never taken one of those apart before. I didn't realize. I mean, I guess that makes sense.
Yeah. It's like screwed down. Okay. So I would describe that as the classic Mac. This one.
That's not bad. Okay. What do they call that? Chime?
No, that's bell. That's chime.
Oh, it just hit me. We should do an episode about operating system event sounds sometime. Have we done that before?
No, we should absolutely do that though.
Should we do that?
We did a bit about sound because we talked about the Brian Eno sound for Windows 95 mm-hmm. being the most expensive piece of music ever composed. Mm-hmm. But I think that's it. How about this one? That's like a Scooby-Doo mystery sound.
Yeah, that one's a little too, I almost want to say sinister. I think we're getting a little too elaborate at this point.
Should we just move on?
A simple, high-pitched, bright sort of ding. Okay. What are we doing here? Why are we employing this audio technology?
Okay, so we had a hard time coming up with an episode this week, which happens occasionally, but not that often.
It's funny.
Yes.
I think we first met Monday evening trying to come up with an episode topic.
Look.
And then kept trying all week and came up with nothing. But then when we finally hit on one, yesterday, we also hit on like three others right at the same time. So now we have the next month of episodes.
Yeah. So again, when it rains, it pours. This episode, when we were describing it to each other, we decided to pitch it as legitimate grievance or not.
Okay. Yes. I think that's a good way to put it.
Yeah. So
grievance or whining?
Grievance or peeve, maybe?
A peeve
seems inconsequential. The idea is this something that it's okay for you to be upset by, or are you being like the notch is a perfect example of this.
Oh, come on now. I was not going to bring it up.
This whole thing is an excuse for me to give you more grief about the notch.
I don't even know what you're talking about.
Okay. Anyway, the point is, each of us is going to describe something that annoys us about computers or computing or technology. And then the other person is going to, we're going to talk through it a little bit and then we're going to make a judgment. We're going to say, no, Brad, I think your fears about the notch are a peeve. They're not a legitimate grievance.
Well, the way you put it when we were brainstorming this episode was you're being a dipshit. Is this a legitimate grievance or are you just being a dipshit is what you said?
Yeah.
Quote. So,
and if you disagree with us, we'd love to hear about it. You can post in the Discord. You can add us on Twitter. You can send us an email to techpod@content.town.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you want to kick it off? You want me to kick it off?
I think you have one more than I do. So why don't you go first?
Oh, I have a long list at this point.
It'll wrap around. So at the end of each one, I guess we will seal the deal with a good sound or a bad sound.
So this started with Windows 11. When I was, when we were talking about this, I was looking at my taskbar and for some reason, the icons, the last icon on the row occasionally gets overlapping the one that is before it.
Which is
just to be clear, like seemingly the only way to fix it is to drag the icons around a little bit or just reboot. It's not good.
Is it? I mean, am I putting the cart before the horse here by saying that is absolutely legitimate grievance? That's gross. How does that happen?
I don't know. It makes me really sad and upset every time it happens, though.
They've been making Windowses for a very long time.
We did a list ranking of them. You know, now that Windows 11's out, we could redo that. We can have a whole new, I mean, that could upend the entire Apple cart.
Okay. What is your snap judgment? Where does Windows 11, don't even pull up the list. Just gut feeling. Where would Windows 11 land on a list of Windows?
Probably between 10 and 7.
Okay. Wait, really?
Maybe below, maybe one notch below, whichever one's the low one there.
That's pretty high, but I guess
it's pretty good.
Seems like people like Windows 11.
I don't have a beef with
generally.
It's generally better than Windows 10, I would say.
Now that they brought a double monitor clock back.
Double monitor clock fixed about 80% of my issues, it turns out.
I still am shocked that people even run taskbar on second monitor, but I digress.
Well, when I'm playing a game, I like to have the clock so I know what time it is.
That's fair. I use my Playdate for that now.
Well, fair. I mean, but yeah, look, my Playdate was immediately co-opted by my wife, so.
Oh, no.
Look, it's fine. I'm happy she's enjoying it.
Okay.
So you think this is a legitimate grievance?
Well, is it literally just this graphical glitch, like just the icons overlapping? Because wasn't there also something about like they took away certain functionality about hiding tray icons or something like that?
You can't hide the network and sound icons anymore. I don't know why that is. My guess is that the only people who did that did it by accident and then couldn't find them and were confused and caused a support issue.
I have to disagree strongly.
I know you and I use ear trumpet because we're good people, but right. Most people don't know about ear trumpet.
Right. Yeah. So we talked about it. If you haven't listened to last week's FossPod, we talked about ear trumpet among others as a piece of open source software that we like and recommend. Ear trumpet is just a way, way better volume icon in Windows that adds a whole bunch of functionality for changing audio devices quickly, for sending specific apps to different audio devices.
You can literally, if you want Spotify, like I have speakers and a headphone hooked up to different outputs on my computer. When I want Spotify to come out of the speakers, I just drag Spotify up to the top of the list and it comes out the speakers like magic. It's fantastic.
It's super elegant. It's awesome. Ear trumpet, go get it. But the use case is that it looks exactly like the default Windows volume icon. Like they're indistinguishable unless you mouse over them or click them. So the idea is that you hide the default one and use ear trumpet instead. But if you can't hide the default one,
I think that is the only legitimate use I've ever heard of for hiding the default volume icon.
I agree.
Yeah. Anyway,
I agree.
So, the functionality is if you want to click on the icon that's underneath the one on the top, it's indeterminate which one you get. It seems like sometimes you get the right one. Sometimes you get the left one.
That's bad. That is genuinely bad. Also, I'm going to say if you want to broaden this to just like general Windows 11 taskbar shenaniganery, is that a word? Then I would say absolutely legitimate grievance because you still can't move that thing to the side or top, right?
I'm going to check right now. It looks like it still does not move to the left side. You can left justify it now though.
Oh, you mean move all the icons? The
icons, put them all on the left. I kind of am into them on the middle though, it turns out.
Oh man, I don't know. It
reminds me of OS 10. It makes me happy. I like OS 10.
I don't know about the dock. I've been, now that I'm back to using Mac OS a lot again, I wonder if the dock has, I wonder if the dock's time has come and gone. Maybe it's time for something new.
Well, how would you switch icons?
I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. So you feel like legitimate grievance for this. I feel like this is a legitimate grievance.
Yeah. Yes. Give yourself a ding.
Ding.
Okay. We're not even doing the sound effects now.
I put my phone down. I'm sorry. Hold on.
That's fine.
This is a good bit.
Okay. Is it really?
No, that was the wrong ding too. Shit.
I didn't even hear it. Our video call is filtering out for me, but okay.
Okay.
Great. Okay.
What you got, Brad? Legitimate grievance or being a dipshit?
I don't think we can put that in the episode title. Okay. I may have mentioned this before. These monitors that I'm using.
Mm-hmm. Just to be clear, these are new monitors that you bought. These are not the old 22-inch monitors from the last century.
Dude,
you miss them, don't you?
No, absolutely not. Okay. Nothing is ever allowed to go away on the internet, I have found.
No, it'll haunt you. People are going to ask you about that shit for years.
Like Patrick Klevick tweeted last week about some old giant bomb monitors that I guess I handled the purchasing for years and years ago, and he still had one or two of them and he was about to get rid of them, and a bunch of people responded like, oh, give them to Brad, he loves old monitors. Like, no.
Do you know what one of those monitors was?
I have two nice, very modern monitors now. The old monitors are long gone.
One of those monitors was that amazing Sony monitor that you could put shutter glasses on and one person would see one screen and one person would see the other screen.
The PSP TV, the giant TV that looked like a PSP.
I think
yes,
so.
That's what that is. Yes. It was marketed as a TV, not as a monitor.
Yeah. It was TV. It can be
both, obviously.
It was a very stupid idea that was the only time I ever saw that executed, I think.
It didn't get used much, I don't think.
No, it was completely useless.
I think there was very little support for that on the software side.
Yeah, and like it went away with the PS4 the moment the PS4 came out.
Also went away with 3D. Hey, remember 3D?
Yeah. My daughter the other day was like, hey, I really want to go see a movie where you wear the glasses, Dad. And I was like, well, I got bad news for you, kid.
Yeah. Okay.
Maybe Spider-Verse.
These Asus, I'm sorry, Asus.
Yes.
It'll always be Asus in my heart.
You got to Asus it, man.
I've got to get on. Yes. I've got to follow the corporate branding guidelines.
You've got
to
that Asus.
Okay.
So these
Asus monitors, they are 1440p. They're 27 inch. They are completely modern. They have FreeSync, the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
They have auto input select that cannot be disabled. And it has a very, very short timer of like 2 seconds, maybe 3 seconds.
Ugh.
So like what I'm talking about is if it doesn't detect a signal on the input you've got it on and it detects a signal on another one, it will just switch to that other one after like 2 or 3 seconds of no signal.
So it means a reboot, it changes inputs?
It depends.
What do you have plugged into the monitors?
Let's see. So the left monitor is my desktop PC.
Okay.
Okay, so I've got an HDMI switcher that consoles and the Mister get plugged into. That goes to the HDMI 1 on both monitors.
Okay.
On
both monitors?
Yes. Because it has multi-out. The switcher has multiple outputs. And depending on what I'm doing, I might want to switch to that switcher on one monitor or the other.
Okay, fair.
I have extra inputs and nothing else to do with them.
Yeah, so. Yeah.
Input 1 on both monitors is the desktop PC. Input 2 on both monitors is that switcher, so I can have consoles on one or the other.
Okay.
It's a little complicated. I don't need to get into it. Input 3 on the right monitor is the NAS.
Okay.
Input 3 on the left monitor is the capture card. It's hard to explain.
If you have the pass-through from the capture card?
Yes, okay. The pass-through from the capture card goes to input 3 on on left monitor. I know this is a lot. I'm sorry.
Well, hold on. Do you not run the... So you don't run the consoles into the capture card?
I do through that switcher.
Oh,
it's
okay.
It's a long story. The switcher is under my desk and there's some permanent, like the Mister and this Xbox Series S live under there permanently. But if I have to drag like the PS5 in here, it's easier to plug it straight into the capture card. And then I
go
through that switcher. It just comes straight out of the pass through capture
card.
Anyway. Like doing live streaming or capture or also running this NAS 24/7, like practically the second it loses signal on an input, it will just switch to another input, even though I'm like, no, wait, like I'm just trying to update the switch so I can play a game on it for the stream. But now I have to like go in and change the inputs again because you just can't sit still.
So I'm going to make a suggestion. I think this is a legitimate grievance because you should be able to turn off auto input switching on every monitor ever. That should never be forced on.
It's so annoying.
B, I don't think you should leave your NAS plugged into the monitor all the time.
So that's the net result of this is that I have to just pull the HDMI cable from the NAS because there's no way to make it not put output video all the time.
I can't remember the last time my NAS was plugged into a monitor.
It's come in handy once in a while because the system, like the syslog outputs to the display.
I mean, every once in a while, when my boot pool got jacked up, I had to go into the garage and take it down off the shelf and carry it in here and plug it in, which was a pain in the butt.
Right. Right.
But yeah, 100% legitimate grievance for this one.
Well, 110%. Well, thank you. I've got our favorite Nursoft utility here open. Ooh.
You mean
control your monitor. I didn't even have to prompt you. It's good work.
Control.
Yes, I do in fact have control my monitor up here. There's a bunch of VCP codes here that are all just listed as manufacturer specific. A bunch of them are actually enumerated. It's like restore factory defaults, brightness, contrast, select color presets, video gain.
Ooh.
Let's see. There is an input. Like there's like sharpness, OSD, language, but there's like a dozen VCP codes that don't have definitions.
Mm.
I was thinking about just getting in there and like poking all of those codes, seeing what happens. What do you think?
I mean, what happens? What's the reset option? Can you factory reset the monitor?
Yes. From control my monitor? Like, yes, you can. The very first VCP code that you can toggle, which is just a 0 or a 1, is restore factory defaults. So I don't think I could break anything too bad.
What if one of those toggles, it turns off VCP codes? Or DCP or VCP?
VCP.
VCP.
Video control protocol. Just guessing. We should do an acronym episode sometime.
Oh, yeah. That sounds like a real barn burner. We'll submit that one to the podcast awards.
I love acronyms. Okay.
I know.
Yeah, these VCP codes, like Control My Monitor, actually lists like what all the possible values are for each one. And some of these are just 0 and 1. Some of them go from between like 0 and 6 or like 1 and 8. What could these things be? What if there is heretofore unknown control I could be exercising over these monitors?
What if you could increase the timeout from like 3 seconds to 60 seconds?
Ooh, that's a good. Ooh, yeah.
Because an 8-bit would be what, 32 seconds?
Yeah, something like that. Maybe. I don't know.
Maybe. Okay. Anyway.
I don't speak binary, but this might bear further investigation. Anyway, I'm glad to have your approval.
Yeah, I approve. This is not you being a dipshit. This is a legitimate grievance.
Okay, so far we are at 0 on the dipshittery scale.
Okay, I've got one. Here's one. You know how when you're building a computer and you haven't built a computer in a minute, but these days there's a bunch of coolers and nonsense and like a bunch of like often like a fancy motherboard, especially will have a bunch of shrouds over the motherboard bits. So you don't see all the circuit boards and stuff. You just see like a couple of holes and slots and then the rest of it looks like a spaceship.
Are those just aesthetic shrouds? Like you said, I haven't touched a very new motherboard in a while. I assume those were all heat sinks. Is that not?
Well, so some of them are heat sinks, like the ones over like Northbridge or whatever the modern equivalent of the Northbridge is, are often heat sinks. But also they're often just for cosmetic purposes. They make it really hard to get the screws in the holes without like dropping a screw and it rolling back someplace and getting up under the shroud or falling under the board or whatever. And I think that they suck. I think that if you are a motherboard manufacturer and you don't leave enough clearance to get a screw into the hole on the motherboard before you have your stupid cosmetic stuff and your giant capacitors and whatever, I think that that is a legitimate grievance.
I tend to agree, because I think that anything inside of a PC case that is form over function is nonsense, because in my view, the inside of a PC is not to be seen.
I have glass on two sides of my case, you know?
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, like that, to be clear, that stuff is absolutely marketed at the like RGB crowd, right? Like I want this computer to look cool through the window.
My computer does look cool through the window. Thank you for noticing.
Yes, I've seen it.
It's very glowy. Bad.
It's pretty slick, but those things are stupid. Shrouds in general. Like I've got a there's a PSU shroud in my fractal.
Oh,
that is absolutely maddening. It is like anytime I have to plug a new device into that power supply is like I'm down on the floor, like contorting my arms into some kind of pretzel shape, trying to get both hands into that tiny kind of crevice or you know.
Yeah,
it's covering things for no. Well, in the power supply case, what is the intention there?
It's just to keep the cables managed, probably.
I guess, yeah. But like putting a giant metal housing around the thing where you need to run a bunch of cables, it's not great.
Well, so my case, actually, you pull off the back and then that whole area is open so you can get in there. It's still pretty hard to get the power. Like if you have a modular power supply, it's pretty hard to plug the power cords in when it's in.
Yes.
But also you can just unscrew like a couple of screws in the back and slide the whole thing forward. Then you have room to work and then slide it back. I like the shroud for hiding the power supply cables, but you're right. It is it adds an enormous amount of complexity to like plugging anything into the computer.
It's tough, but yeah, it looks nice. Like the cable management is, you know, it's nice and clean in there, but
yeah.
I think the thing you're talking about, the aesthetic cover on a bunch of the motherboard stuff is kind of ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, and also it means that like if a piece, like I had an Intel motherboard that like a little transistor fell off of one time, like a surface mount transistor fell off and then the network card stopped working.
Oh, funny.
So I picked the transistor back up and I put a little bit of solder on it. I put a little bit of solder on the other side and soldered it back on. And guess what? The network card started working again.
Funny how that works as well.
I unplugged it first, of course, but anyway.
So, I mean, is it not really feasible to remove those shrouds? Like, can they not just be screwed off or something?
I haven't tried. Hmm. I haven't even looked. My guess is that they snap on, but I don't know for sure.
What motherboard maker?
Like almost all of the high end ones have them now. So like if you buy anything from the mid range on up, you're going to have those over at least a big chunk of the board.
That's just the way things are going. What kind is yours though?
Well, mine doesn't. I didn't buy one that did that. But mine does have a big heat sink next to the center hole, which like mine has a functional heat sink in a place that it probably has to be. Mm. But it's annoying because it like every time I try to put the screw in that one, it falls. My last motherboard solved that problem by making the one that's hard to get to a pin. So like you have one instead of a screw, you just put the hole on this pin and then it's kind of like a pivot for the rest of the board.
Okay.
And then you screw the rest of the holes down. Cause like realistically you don't need like four screws probably in a motherboard. You don't need all eight or nine or whatever it is.
Yeah, that's fair. The little bit of guesswork that goes along with building a computer these days, specifically about clearances, like as heat sinks have gotten so big, for example, like the kind of nail biting moment where you put everything together and try to figure out if the heatsink is going to clear the RAM or not is not fun.
When NVIDIA announced 3090s and you were like, this looks just like a 3080. And then you looked at the specs and you're like, oh, wow, it's like 3 inches longer. And nobody knew if their cases were going to fit the 3090s at that point yet. There was a lot of like, a friend of mine had a 3090, got a 3090 because it was the video card he could get when it was ordered. And he's like, is this going to fit in my case? And I was like, man, I have no idea. Like the specs say it should, but it's going to be really, really close. And we ended up having to take out his front drive bay in order to fit it in because it was like there just wasn't like it was long enough that there was no clearance. And like it's inside the PCI Express spec. It's inside the spec for the slot. But it's just a big ass card. So what are you going to do?
Ridiculously long for sure. Yeah. I can't even imagine how big the next generation of GeForces are going to be. If any of these leaks about the thermals on those cards are accurate, I can't imagine how big they're going
to
be.
I saw the one with three fans on the air cooler and then also a radiator attached to it. And I was like, just damn.
Is that a 4D?
That was a 4000 rumor. I don't know if it's true. Okay.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know how. What's the code name for those? Is it Lovelace? I think it's.
Can't remember.
Let me see.
I don't know if they've announced anything yet, actually.
I think the 40 series. I don't know.
That would be in line.
30 was Ampere. You know, 20 was Turing.
Yeah. Mathematicians, computer scientists.
I can't. Yeah, it might be. Or Ada. It may be Ada. I'm not sure.
We'll find out. I mean, I assume we'll find out soon. It seems like
Yeah. Seems like the rumors are picking up. But anyway,
what's your next one, Brad?
It's turning into a very hardware centric episode for better or worse. OK. I kind of did a big hardware refresh rebuild on my NAS.
Uh-huh.
A few months ago, I swapped the old 5400 RPM drives out that were starting to make some questionable noises.
Good call.
With some 7200 RPM drives.
Are they just generally louder now?
So also they're very high density. And I, in the course of putting this thing together and going, wow, these things are loud, I started looking around and it makes sense mechanically that much higher density drives are also much louder mechanically. There's just a lot. There are more platters in there. There's more thunking around of the read heads moving and stuff like that.
Thunking is not what you want.
Well, dude, I literally had to do some Googling after I installed those things to make sure they weren't defective because the noises they make when they boot up.
Did you put them in quiet mode?
Or disturbing? What is that?
So most SATA drives you can put in spinning disks, you can put in quiet mode or loud mode, and it'll reduce the aggressiveness of the read head movements. So they click less.
Well, what is there's got to be a downside. There's
a little bit of a performance impact, but not enough that you'd care probably for an NAS. No,
definitely not for as high performance as it. Wow, I should look into that. Is that something you enable at the firmware level?
You can,
or like some kind of manufacturer utility?
You either do it on the firmware level or you can maybe do it with Smart. I can't remember. There's a way you could do it in BSD, I think.
Okay, I'll check. Also, these drives are plugged into a SAS card, so I don't know if that makes a difference or not, but we'll see. I should look into that, though, because where I'm going with this is not only are these things really loud, like the noise the drives themselves make is tolerable, but when I put them into, I've got another Fractal case that machine lives in, they rattle the hell out of that case anytime they do anything remotely heavy. It's the rattling that is killing me. It's not the sound of the drives themselves. It's a vibration in the case.
So this is a solvable problem. You just need to put some rubber gaskets between the screws and the case.
So I've got that. So like this Fractal, the drives mount to rubber gaskets.
Okay.
Okay. Drives mount onto removal trays in this thing. So they slide into it is like a metal on plastic railing system with a click.
Yeah.
Like it snaps in. And then each of those drive trays has rubber gaskets that the drives sit on. So they're already cushioned in that way.
I think the gaskets have to be between the rails and the drive.
So that's the thing. Well, so there's rubber between the mounting tray and the drive.
Huh. I would. Well, but then the mounting tray is probably going to rattle.
I think that's what it is. So I'm thinking, well, first of all, do you want to make your judgment?
I think that this is probably a legitimate grievance that is solvable.
Okay. It's the machine is 4 feet away.
I mean, I think putting your NAS in your office is also a questionable decision, but knowing your apartment situation, I don't think you have a lot of choices.
I'm working with a limited amount of space here.
No, I understand. Like you could,
if this thing lived in a basement or garage, like it should, then this would be zero problem.
Yeah. In the garage, I'm just like, Gina comes in, everyone's always like, hey, because of the laundry rooms in our garage. She's like, hey, the server's making weird noises again. I'm like, oh, hey, I'll go listen.
Hey, the server is louder than the washing machine. What's going on here?
Yeah, look, man, when we got quiet washing machines, there was a period of time when I had a drive that was quietly dying and I didn't realize it. And the server was absolutely louder than the washing machine.
Ah, domestic bliss. That sounds fun. What is your solution here? I've been thinking over some options, but I'm curious to hear what you think.
So is there a place you can just screw the drives into the case?
No. They have to mount.
That's the only place you have them. Okay.
Those removable trays. So my thought is to pad the railing between the tray and, or, you know.
Well, I was going to say, can you screw into the tray? Because a lot of time the tray will have the quick release rails, but it'll also have a place that you can screw in, like on the bottom.
Wait, I'm not sure what you
mean. There's two ways to mount hard drives. There's four holes on the bottom of the drive. Yes. And there's six holes on the sides of the drive.
Oh, no, they don't have the side mounts, if that's what you mean.
Okay, but can you screw it into the bottom and just not fuck with the rails at all? Like not use those rails?
No, the rails are the only way that the tray is attached to the case.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I don't know. So, then I'd have to look at the case design.
It is a Define Mini. It's a pretty old case. It's not a Mini C, which is their newer Mini line. You legitimately will have a hard time Googling the regular Define Mini.
Okay.
The Mini C has kind of taken over everything, but I was thinking like padding the railing where the trays slide in. I'm not sure with what.
I was going to say, like, I would get some thin rubber gaskets and put them on the pins that go in on those rails on the side between the pins and the mount.
Okay.
Like on the rails that you snap in.
Yeah. The clearance is like next to nothing. I mean, like probably a millimeter or two.
You're looking at like, you know, two mil, probably rubber gaskets, and you want it to be tight because you want them to hold it in place and not transfer the noise.
Those are like stick on.
They're probably just going to have friction go in and over the pins.
So that's my other question is, well, what do you mean by pins? I'm not sure.
Well, do the rails not have pins that go into the holes where the screws would normally go?
I don't think so. This would be a lot easier if we had a picture of this in front of us.
Yeah. So the TLDR is, yo, figure out a way to insulate, to stop vibrations from transferring from the hard drive into the drive cages.
Yes, exactly.
And I don't know what the solution to that is off the top of my head.
I thought about just hitting the discount fabric store and maybe grabbing a little bit of felt, cutting some very short strips and like padding the railing that way.
Felt circles, probably not a terrible, like the thing is you don't want the drives to move, but I think felt's probably fine.
Okay. Like, I think I'd rather put a little bit of fat. I mean, I think the ambient temperature in there is probably, I don't know. The CPU sits at like 35 C for the most part. So I don't have an ambient temperature.
Do you have fans blowing over the drives?
Yes.
Yeah. If you have fans blowing over the drives, it doesn't matter. Just don't put it like, just don't clog the airflow between the drives.
No, that would not be a problem. I was a little reluctant to put either fabric or the other thing I thought about is like some electrical tape or some painter's tape or something like that.
I wouldn't use tape for this. I don't think it's going to do what you want.
Yeah, and I don't really want to put anything with adhesive in there, but I also am not sure I want to put fabric in there. I don't know.
Well, it's not like it's not going to get hot enough to catch the fabric on fire, and you're not going to block the airflow with the fabric, yeah. So you're probably fine.
I think I might try that. I mean, it's like a couple bucks to grab a little roll of felt, give it a shot.
Yeah, let it rip.
Okay. So is that a ding?
Legitimate grievance.
Okay.
Congratulations. You get another.
All right.
Ding.
We are.
I've now used four different dings.
We are still at dipshit zero.
Dipshit zero. Three, I believe.
I don't know that allowing ourselves to judge ourselves was the best call here, but you know, maybe people in the Discord will have different thoughts.
Okay, I've got. I think this is my best shot at a dipshit here. I'm gonna open it up.
All right.
You know how when you turn your computer on in the morning and like everything's fine, and then just for like 2 seconds the monitor turns on and off.
Wait.
Mine
does that.
Okay, so I've only had one DisplayPort monitor. The only DisplayPort monitor I've had that doesn't have some sort of occasional like glitching out is this 360 hertz one. All the others, like the 60 hertz 4K one, my ultra wide screen, all of those, there's always some sort of display port glitch that happens like 2 to 5 minutes after you turn the computer on, and then it's fine.
Really? Like, yeah. Like the signal just blips off for a second?
Just blip, just goes black. Windows doesn't act like it's disconnected or anything. It's just like the screen turns off, then it turns back on. Everything's cool.
Jeez, man. Maybe I should feel more thankful about these monitors than I am.
There's no, like, functionally, that's no problem.
Yeah. I don't know.
I've literally thought about replacing every monitor. Over the years, I've replaced every cable that plugs into these. No change. I've used HDMI. I've used DisplayPort. I've used Thunderbolt. I've done all of the things that I know to do to see if there's something like outside of the monitor that causes these problems. Always happens. Ever since I switched, the last monitor I had that didn't do this was probably a 30-inch Dell 2560 by 1600, like the one of the big boys.
Yes, that monster that everybody bought.
And it used DVI. So like,
yeah,
like since we've gone to the new, I'm air quoting, better modern standards that all suck.
Yeah,
it's always been a problem. This annoys me to know. Like I have legitimately, like every once in a while it'll happen in the morning. I'm like, the first thing I do is go and look up monitor prices. I'm like, should I just replace this fucking monitor?
And to be clear, these problems span graphics cards. This is not limited to your most recent card.
Okay. Every computer I plug it into.
Interesting. You've done a lot of that with VR demos and stuff, right?
I mean, I'm probably only on NVIDIA cards during this time span, but multiple NVIDIA generations, video cables.
Right. To have it span different types of monitors and different graphics cards and everything, it's obviously not a problem with one specific thing.
But just to be clear, it is a problem that lasts 1 second once a day, maybe 2 seconds.
So I think I might give you a half C on this one.
Wow.
Or
generous. Okay.
So in a vacuum, the monitor blipping off for a second or two once a day, not a big deal.
Yeah.
To say.
Yeah.
However, I'm going to say that there is a level of like anxiety and mistrust that goes along with a display flickering off consistently. That's really unpleasant.
Yeah.
And in that sense, I think this is totally legitimate. Like my TV, I don't know if it's the TV or the receiver, but something in my entertainment center chain. Mm-hmm. Makes this happen where like I'll be playing PS5 or Series X and like it's like once a week or once every 2 weeks, but like the display will just go off for like the sound continues, but the video just drops for like 3 or 4 or 5 seconds.
Oh yeah. That would make me crazy,
which is kind of similar to what you're describing. And like it comes back and it's not a problem, but what's going on? And like, it engenders a certain degree of like, I don't know, lack of faith in your stuff. Like, is this going to become a worse problem? What is going on here? This doesn't make sense. This is just a handshaking thing.
This is like when I plugged in the Mister the first time and it busted the CEC chain on my TV. Oh God.
Don't even get me started.
I couldn't figure out what the hell was going on and I thought I was going to have to replace the whole, I thought everything was bad. I thought everything was broken.
Oh my God. I 100% had the exact same experience.
It required a hard reboot. Like I had to shut down power to everything in the entertainment center to unfuck it. It was bad.
I spent a couple hours thinking that my receiver had died the first time I plugged my Mister in and played it on the TV.
Yeah.
Because in my case, I don't know if it's like this with you. In my case, if I plug the Mister in, it works while I've got it plugged in and the receiver is on the first time.
Yep.
But once I turn the receiver off, as long as the Mister is still plugged into HDMI, the receiver will not come back on. It's literally just dead. It's like bricked.
Oh, it was worse than that. Okay. My receiver would come on if I hit the button manually, but it wouldn't respond to any CEC stuff.
Okay. Mine wouldn't even do that. Like it literally, like the power button did nothing. Like I thought that it was literally just dead. And the weird part is the second I pull the HDMI out of the Mister, the receiver comes on automatically.
And
I have no idea why. Like, did it cue some power command that I have no idea.
Yeah.
I bought a little like 6-inch HDMI cable that's supposed to strip CEC. Mm-hmm. From Amazon. I suspect it does not in fact strip. I really should just do a continuity test on whichever pin carries CEC.
I just bought a dongle that works great and it just stays plugged into the cable that the Mister plugs into in the living room.
That's what this is supposed to be, but I suspect it does not actually disconnect the pin. It says it does.
I destroyed
it because it's still a problem.
I destroyed a pretty nice HDMI cable trying to break the one pin from the connector. It turns out those pins are too small. To pop loose.
I'm glad to hear you say that because I've thought about doing that because I see people occasionally recommend that of just like, just pull the pin out.
You need a really real, like I have a very small, tiny set of needle nose pliers and it was not tiny enough.
Okay.
You need like jeweler's needle noses, basically.
Yeah, I've always thought that actually having the dexterity and tools to do that would be pretty difficult.
I think I could do it with a magnifying glass and a pair of fine needle noses, but I didn't have them when I was doing it. So you think this feels like a dipshit to me. 1 second, man. It's 1 second once a day.
I mean, yeah, again, functionally, it's not a big deal. Like in terms of it kind of undermining your confidence in your hardware, I could see it.
I'm beginning to think that maybe with our combined level of anxiety about computer related stuff, maybe this was a flawed episode idea, but you know,
we're in too deep at this point. Nice. Nice. Okay. See, you can be self-critical after all.
Yeah.
All right.
If I can't be self-critical, what can I be?
All right. My next one is a thing because I've been looking at motherboards lately.
Okay.
Because I am going to build a new PC in the coming months. There are not enough PCI Express slots on motherboards anymore.
Hold on. Are you sure you're going to build a new PC?
100%. Wait, really?
I want to support you in this, Brad. I think you will too.
Hang on. Which one were you putting the kibosh on? My PCI Express slot thing?
No, the PCI Express slot is 100% a legitimate grievance.
Okay.
Building a new PC this year. I'd say that's a 50-50.
I have to. It has just been too long. I mean, like, to be clear, in day-to-day operation, if I'm not doing something compute heavy, like compressing something or whatever, like just day-to-day Windows use, like this 7700K is still...
Yeah, my 2012 MacBook Pro is great too, as long as I don't use it for anything.
Come on. Yeah, use it. Oh, come on. talking to a friend who works in CPUs recently, though.
Yes.
Someone who has a tremendous amount of hands-on experience with different CPUs.
Yes.
They told me when I said that, they said they basically were like, yeah, that's probably totally true, but also I bet you will really feel a difference when you do.
You will immediately feel an enormous difference the moment you set up a new machine. Yes.
And like reading that is what actually one of the things that, I mean, I was already ready to upgrade, but reading that was like, oh man, what if I am missing all of this nice smoothness that I could be having?
And you can move to Windows 11 and then immediately lose all those performance gains. It'll be great.
That's right.
This is similar to one of my complaints, actually.
Yeah. We might be able to merge this one. We talked about this a little, like, I think in your case, it's PCI Express lanes, and in my case it's physical slots, although those are kind of interrelated. But like looking at motherboards out there, like I've got, let me see, in my PC as of right now, I got a 3080, which takes up two slots. I've got a USB 3 expansion card. I've got a capture card, and I've got that Mellanox network adapter that goes between my PC and my NAS. So like, that's kind of a lot of PCI Express stuff, and a lot of the motherboards I'm looking at out there, I can't even accommodate all of that at this point.
So these are two separate but related problems. One is that there's not enough physical slots on the board, and the other is that there are not enough lanes connecting the slots to things on the board.
Right. So I was hoping you could help demystify here, like what the actual correspondence is between lanes and slots. Like when you see a 1X PCI E slot or an 8X or a 4X or whatever.
Yeah.
Does that number just refer to the number of lanes that is servicing that slot?
No, when it's a 1X slot, it means the physical connector. So the physical connector determines the maximum number of lanes that can be assigned to a slot.
Okay.
But the actual number of lanes assigned to the slot is assigned by the UEFI BIOS in the motherboard.
Okay. So it's
based
not like
on
a
4X. What's plugged in.
Okay. So it's not as simple as a 4X slot has four lanes.
Well, theoretically, that's the maximum, but because there's a limited, the problem fundamentally is that there's usually not enough lanes since there's no North Bridge anymore, really, the number of lanes that is accessible are baked into the CPUs. And one of the manufacturers likes to use that as a marketing differentiator. And one of the manufacturers seems less keen on that.
one of them just says here's how many lanes we can do. Here you go.
Yeah. And like everything in that generation, like so AMD Zen 3 stuff all seems like it has 24 lanes in the CPU.
I just checked right before this in the desktop space for the Zen 3 chips, from the cheap one to the best one, they all have 24 lanes.
Yeah. So, but like, for example, on 12th generation Core i5s, you get 20 lanes, and Core i7s. Hold on. I'm on arc.intel right now looking at this, so I don't mess it up.
Oh, I love a good arc.
On i9s, you get, I'm looking at the cheapo.
Wait, is there such a thing as a cheapo i9?
Well, I mean, there is a less expensive i9. On the i9, it's 20 lanes.
Okay. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I would have expected more.
In order to get more, you have to get a Xeon, which all of a sudden you're getting into like some real, real cheddar. So the problem is you can have, so the problem is everything uses lanes now, right? So your video card uses 16 lanes, presumably, or eight, it's 16 lanes, but probably it really only needs eight. Your SSD, your NVMe SSD uses a few lanes. Your everything that you plug into USB-C that uses the Thunderbolt stuff uses lanes.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, your USB-C controller uses lanes.
Right, we just went over this in an episode. Was it last week?
It was a while ago.
The Thunderbolt is just PCI Express over.
Yeah, it's just another. It's another form factor for like. So think about this as physical layer and software layer.
Yes.
And like the physical layer in that is a USB-C cable, but ultimately it's just PCI Express lanes.
Right.
So there's not enough. Like the thing that ends up happening here is that then you have like these USB-C 3.2 things. USB-C 3.2 Gen 3 or whatever the current nomenclature is. I don't know. It's mm-hmm. fucking stupid. But you don't have enough lanes is the upshot. So even if you had enough slots on the motherboard, like I can't, my CPU does not have enough lanes for me to put another NVMe SSD in the computer. So if I want to add more space, I either have to buy a new NVMe SSD, back up everything, copy it back on, or more likely plug them both in at the same time and have them run at half speed. But those lanes are assigned by the motherboard, and there's most motherboard manufacturers don't tell you how lanes are going to be assigned. So like if I had a PCI Express SSD, there's no way for me to plug it into this motherboard and get the right number of lanes to it because the motherboard doesn't have the wiring to assign lanes to slots in the appropriate way because they're assuming everything's a video card if it's getting plugged into a slot pretty much.
Sure. Which maybe leads us to why the slots are just slowly disappearing from boards.
I mean, the upshot is we don't like the things that you would plug into slots realistically are capture cards, video cards, maybe SSDs, but probably they're all going in NVMEs now, in M2 slots now. And maybe like I had an HTC Intel Y gig adapter for wireless VR for a while that like, That used one PCI Express slot. If you haven't, like, if you need a network adapter, that's probably a 1X PCI Express slot. If you will need more USB ports, because like this is the other thing, USB went from supporting like 512 devices per chain to 128 devices per chain, and also every device is like five devices now.
Yeah.
So you know, like my keyboard is four devices, I think, because it's a lighting controller, it's an audio controller, it's the keyboard, and then it's something else. I don't remember what the other thing is. Anyway, maybe it's only three devices. But yeah, so we need more fucking lanes. That's the TLDR.
More lanes and more slots. I mean, maybe this is the part where I become a dipshit on this one, but it seems like the slots are giving, well, let me be more specific here. It seems like the PCI Express slots are giving way to more M.2 sockets, I guess is the word, right? I started to say M.2
slots. There's still slots.
Or sockets or whatever. Yeah, sockets, you call whatever. Like it seems like there is more M.2 and less PCIe slot.
But I mean, and
who needs all of those?
The bummer is you can't use any of them because there's not enough fucking lanes.
Right. Or even if you could, like who is, I mean, I know you can plug other types of devices besides storage into M.2, but like.
Not really though.
Well, there are some people I've seen. There are AI accelerators now that can plug in and like some USB based stuff. Like there
wow,
are,
I didn't know that. That's cool.
And Wi-Fi. There are M.2 Wi-Fi adapters. Like anything that can be USB
or PCI
Express can plug in there. So you are starting to see some more non-storage devices in M.2 form factor.
Well, but M.2 is just the thing. It's just a small PCI Express slot.
Right. Or but it can also be
SATA. It can also be SATA or USB. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. So that's what I mean. Anything that can go over one of those interfaces could theoretically be M.2, but like put it on a card, put it on a PC, should have cards in them.
Well, but the other problem with the M.2 slot is that it's not like they're not backwards compatible in the same way that PCI Express is. Like you can plug a PCI Express 1.0 card into a PCI Express 4.0 slot and it'll still work.
Yes.
Assuming it's the right length.
I would take more slots than more M.2 sockets any day of the week. And my feeling is that you only need one for your boot drive and you're probably good.
So we're legitimate grievance on this one, right?
I mean, again, we are judging ourselves here, but I think so.
Okay.
Nice. get a little
late on that one, but I gated it a little bit, I guess.
Get a little Polytron action in there. A little Fez. Real quick, I was going to say, I don't know if you've seen, there are PCI Express cards that have multiple M.2 sockets on them. So you could plug multiple SSDs into one card and put it in the slot.
I looked at those and something was playing. Okay. I hit another chime by accident. I looked at those and assume that is just another lane disaster waiting to happen. Cause what's going to happen is you're going to take a card that wants four lanes and it's going to get one lane each. And you're going to get four times the storage and a quarter of the performance across all of those.
I did think that like whatever kind of controller is on that card might end up being some kind of bottleneck.
Yeah. Like my experience trying to get VR shit to work with bad USB controllers in the mid 2010s led me to believe that I don't want anything that's not soldered onto the motherboard probably.
Yeah.
I guess. Hey, here's one.
Okay.
You know, when you finish using your computer at the end of the night and you like, don't turn it off, you walk out of the room and then you come back 6 hours later and the screen's still on. It's like just burning full speed there. Mm-hmm. Why doesn't Windows go to sleep, Brad?
Well, first of all, I turn my computer off every night.
Okay. Well, you're responsible. Yeah. Look, I like instant. If I have to come in here and sit and wait 30 seconds for it to turn on, that's not good for me.
Yeah. I mean, in fact, the damn power company has really started dictating my computer usage because we're on that time of use plan.
Oh, yeah.
If possible, usually does not work out this way, but if possible, because the electricity gets so much more expensive at 4 p.m. every day.
Oh, is it 4 p.m.? It's 3 p.m. for us.
Oh, is it? We're on 4 to 9 is our
hot zone. We're 3 to 10.
Interesting. I didn't know they were different.
Oh, no, you're right. Well, so it goes up to the mid step from 3 to 4 and then from 9 to 10 and then through 4 to 9. It's like the super high one.
Interesting.
But the jump from the mid step to the super high one isn't that big.
They ramp up to full price. Anyway, if possible, I try to shut the PC down as early as I can and move to the laptop, which is much more power efficient. Anyway, go on. Yes, that is a real bummer. I mean, I have found like it seems like any kind of like video source, anything that it views as like VLC, for example, if I leave VLC open, even if it's minimized, that'll keep the monitors from going to sleep.
Electron apps seem to do it.
Really?
Discord will keep it running forever.
Gross.
If I have a video open in a Firefox tab, any of them, even one not in the foreground, like I have to close. If I turn off the browser, turn off Discord, turn off OBS.
Mm-hmm.
That will maybe sometimes let it go to sleep.
What is your go to sleep timer? What's your timeout?
I'm aggressive. I set it to 5 minutes.
Oh, wow.
Well, because it comes back so fast. Who cares?
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
But it also never goes to sleep. So it's a moot point. Like it's a completely useless feature.
I think we're in legitimate territory here. I think that like.
Wait, where is it? That one didn't play.
Oh, no.
Oh, crap.
Dealing with monitor sleep, power settings, like power profiles, the whole thing in Windows is really a pain in the rear.
Yeah, monitor sleep doesn't even work in this case. It's maddening.
Yeah. Okay. Ugh. That's pretty dumb. All right. Still doing batting pretty good average here.
I mean, I feel like these are entirely legitimate grievances for the most part. See.
Expect this to inspire some discussion.
Yeah, this is going to be a really active conversation in this week's episode.
In the coming days, yes.
You got another one?
I have an RGB light strip that I have mounted behind my desk.
I've heard about this one before.
It's HomeKit connected.
Okay.
I think, have I mentioned before that it randomly keeps dropping off my network?
Oh, which yeah, means, it's part of the internet of shit. I have a similar problem.
It basically just keeps becoming inaccessible where I can't turn it on and off or do anything with it. It just stays on constantly.
Yeah.
And the way I have it like mounted to the back of the desk and routed, that leads to me to power cycle it. I have to like climb down under the desk on my back and like kind of crawl up behind the desk and like to reach where it's plugged in and power cycle it. So it reconnects. Anyway, I found, that whenever it does that it's dropping onto a different subnet. It's dropping onto a 169.254 prefix subnet.
Oh, it's auto assigning an IP rather than getting one from DHCP.
I was introduced. Hey, I told you I love acronyms. I was introduced to the term APIPA. Is that do people say APIPA?
I've never heard that one before. Yeah, what's the acronym?
The Automatic Private IP Addressing Range.
Yeah.
Which apparently was debuted in Windows. I guess that's like a
Windows 98 thing or something,
I was
going
to say it's like a turn of the century Windows. Yeah. development.
All I remember is that when you started getting 169 IP addresses, it meant something was really jacked on your network.
Right. So I talked to some people in the network channel on the Discord, and yes, like that essentially means that DHCP is failing. I think.
Yep.
I'm guessing because like I think my lease timeout is set to 24 hours or whatever it defaults to on my router. So I'm guessing at some point when the DHCP lease expires on that thing, it has a hard time renewing it for some reason, and then it ends up on this other subnet, and then I can't access it.
Or it could be that it's not able to connect to Wi-Fi in the time that sometimes that happens because like the computer boots and the network hasn't spun up before the computer is booted. So it gives the automatic address and it just never refreshes.
It is a janky strip. It is pretty no name. I've never heard of the manufacturer before. It is no longer in production.
Yeah. I think this is a legitimate grievance. Do you know why I think that, Brad?
Why is that?
Well, I have a whole buttload of Cree connected Zigbee bulbs in my house and they connect to the Home Assistant. Now, in the before times when they were connecting to a Samsung SmartThings hub, flawless, worked for years, no problems. Now, about every third Home Assistant update, they just disconnect. And the solution to reconnect them, they show up as orphaned objects in Home Assistant. Like no amount of reloading or refreshing or reconnecting rebuilds the Zigbee mesh network. So the solution is start with the light bulb that's closest to the Zigbee hub and then do you know how you factory reset a Zigbee bulb?
No.
Well, there's no buttons on them. So you there's this cadence you learn. I can do it in my sleep now. It's 1 second on, 2 seconds off. So it's 1,000 on, 1,002 off, 1,003 off, 1,004 on, 1,005 off, 1,006 on, 1,000. And you do that 7 times.
That's a lot.
And then the light blinks once. And that means that it's factory reset. And that means the moment before it blinks, you hit the find Zigbee devices on the Home Assistant thing. So it's a two hand. It's like juggling, right?
This is like something out of National Treasure or some kind of like ancient ruins heist movie, like ancient bespoke machinery that you have to like crack a safe.
Yeah, it's like some Tom Cruise bullshit. And here's the best part. You have to do it for every one of the bulbs.
Hang on. How are you inputting that sequence? I thought you said there were no buttons.
Well, there's a light switch on the wall. Or if you're on a fixture that doesn't have a light switch, you screw and unscrew the light bulb. Oh, my God.
That's really something.
So the solution is it's $150 worth of bulbs probably in the house. Yes. So I could get other bulbs. Or I could just keep doing this every 2 months.
Mm-hmm. Could I offer a third alternative?
Yeah.
What if you just stopped updating Home Assistant?
Well, but there's a security stuff and things.
Is this just a number go up thing? Like, are you actually using any new features in Home Assistant?
It's in enough. It's in active enough development that I probably want to continue updating it.
Okay.
Because it gets better.
That's fair.
Yeah.
That's fair. I think.
And I use it a lot.
Okay.
Like, the Home Assistant, I'm going to go and tell you. On the list of things that I find out about from my wife or daughter when they're not working, the Home Assistant not working is like probably before the TV, like if the internet goes down, I know because they're like, hey, the Home Assistant isn't working faster than anything else. They don't know that the Home Assistant. They're just like, hey, the lights don't work.
Yeah. And not being able to control your lights. Pretty fundamental problem.
Turns out maybe this whole thing was a mistake, but
I think you might be right.
Yeah. I think yours is a legitimate grievance. Okay. Clearly,
I mean, I think if we're going to sit here and say that Internet of Things not working like they're supposed to, if we deem that a legitimate grievance, I don't think anybody's going to challenge us on that, because who among us has not dealt with this nonsense? Great. Good stuff. Perfect. A PIPA. Automatic private IP addressing range.
Okay. I got one more.
All right.
Well, I got more than one more. I could do three of these episodes a month, probably. Now that I'm into it.
You are tremendously aggrieved.
How about a computer that you use kind of frequently, but not every day, that is unreliable as a result for completely indeterminate reasons?
Is this due to, you just said you haven't determined the problem. I wonder if that's like due to missing updates on a regular schedule or...
My guess is it's just like the electrons get slow inside the CPU and they have to spin up for a little bit.
Right.
My stream PC. So I have a two PC stream setup, which also, to be clear, probably a mistake in the great scheme of things. The second PC I use, you know, 4 times a week, 5 times a week, maybe. The rest of the time it's off. Let's say 1 out of 4 times you boot it up, it just blue screens.
Wow. Okay.
Then okay. It's like, but I don't use it enough to actually go to the trouble and figure out. Like, I'm sure it's memory timings or something stupid in the BIOS that I just haven't taken the time. Okay. There's two problems here. The real reason I haven't gone through and fixed this is it's the monitor that it's attached to this computer is oriented in a portrait fashion, mm-hmm. but the BIOS does not have any provision to rotate to a portrait fashion. If I want to troubleshoot it, I have to rotate my head 90 degrees to the right to read the monitor reliably.
I mean, you're doing it right now. This seems imminently doable.
It's pretty uncomfortable. And also it's way over, the monitor's way over there. So it's okay. Like way off to the right.
All right.
So look, I realize that part of this is a self-inflicted problem. Mm-hmm. I should have probably made sure the machine was really stable before I hooked it up to the portrait monitor. Mm-hmm. However, we live where we are now. And once it boots up and gets past the part where the driver that it doesn't like makes it blue screen, because it is it's a driver. It's not a memory timing. It's not like a bad memory. Like the blue screen error is one that indicates there is a janky driver somewhere on the machine, which also is possible because it's like, you know, this is a Windows install from a while ago, and maybe it's been moved between a couple of different architectures over the years.
I see.
Like, you know, mm-hmm. could be my fault.
Dude. Okay. My opinion may be turning on this one. I might suggest that stability could be a Windows install away on this one.
So the problem with that is the amount of tech debt on recreating the stream setup. And the price of failing the recreation of the stream setup properly is an unbelievable amount of work.
Mm. You can't just export like OBS scenes and Python scripts.
Theoretically,
and
yes.
You just back up that whole install
It also
drive.
Has like a bot, and the bot has a bunch of custom commands and shit in there. And I'm pretty sure I have that backed up well, but I'm not so sure that I would wipe the machine. I'd have to buy a new drive and then reinstall and then have keep the old drives around just in case. You know, it's a little fraught is what I'm saying.
Yes, I understand the power of inertia here.
Yeah,
I think I'll give you this one. What does a portrait mode blue screen look like? Does it even know how to like format the text for that?
90 degrees to the right, Brad.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, right. Wait, hang on. You mean even when Windows is displaying in portrait mode, like the blue screen still comes out in landscape?
The blue screen is in landscape, I believe.
Oh, wow. That's intro. Okay. Huh?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it makes sense because it's double the space if they have to do portrait and landscape.
Yes, that does make sense.
Okay. I'm going to play the sound.
I'm not 1000% convinced on that one, but I'll give it to you.
Should I? I can do a here. Oh.
Huh.
There you go. That? You don't know that one?
No, I gotta find the soundboard you're using.
These are just I'm literally going down my ringtones on the phone.
Oh, wow.
I do. The Fez opening chime was my ringtone for years and years because it just makes me happy every time I hear it.
It's a pretty good one.
That last one is the Mark of the Ninja notification sound.
Oh, wow. Okay. I haven't played that one in a long time. There's something I stopped using novelty ringtones because I realized at a certain point that hearing it that often. And also sometimes associating it with having to pick up the phone had a kind of deadening effect on my affection for those sounds. It's like the more I heard something, the less I liked it, even if it was something I really liked in the first place.
These are still on my phone because they just come over with each new phone install. Thanks to I probably did these on the iPhone 4. Like when,
wow. Like,
somewhere in here, there's the Saints Row song.
You just can't be bothered, huh?
And
there's that inertia again.
Well, it's not that. It just happens. And so the phone's been in silent for 10 years, but they're still here.
Fair.
Yeah.
That's
fair. Look, I have R2-D2 beeps.
My one experience with a novelty ringtone was, gosh, this probably was on the iPhone 3G.
Yeah.
I yanked the, you know, right at the beginning of Portal when you wake up in that little cell and there's a radio there playing the theme song and that real tinny.
Yeah.
I went in the game install and just yanked that audio file of that little radio song out and slapped it on as a ringtone and then came to hate that sound over the years.
I remember I had the Saints Row, the opening like 5 bars of the Saints Row 3 song.
Oh, is the garage song?
It's the one that plays on the main menu, I think.
Oh, okay. That's a different one.
So, like, but Ryan and Jeff and Patrick and like six of us had it in the basement, and it became a problem because every time the phone, somebody's phone would ring, everybody would reach for their phones.
Mm-hmm.
That was the last time I had my phone on, not silent, probably on the reg. Yeah.
That makes sense. Okay. My last one.
Okay.
I think I am just prepared to preemptively self-declare dipshittery on this one.
Okay. I like
it. In fact, I'm not 1,000% serious, although I kind of am.
I know you're serious.
I want faster internet.
Hey, Brad, how fast is your internet now, for the record?
I'm not going to say.
How fast is it?
I have got extremely reliable symmetric gigabit up and down.
Uh-huh.
For a very fair monthly price.
And how fast is your connection between your computer and the router?
Gigabit also.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So where is the bottleneck in a system with faster internet between your house and the outside world?
Okay. Let me just expand on this.
Okay.
This is not about practical application of faster download speeds.
Is this about compensating for other inadequacies?
No, I have literally written this in the show notes doc. 1 gigabit is not exciting anymore.
This is a purely hypothetical need.
So I'll go even further here.
Okay.
We've talked about Chattanooga, Tennessee's municipal 10 gigabit internet service.
Yes.
And how exciting that is.
Yes.
Although I looked at their plans, it's $300 a month. Even if I lived there, I could not justify that cost. Because come on, I don't need 10 gigabit.
What if we hosted the podcast there?
Ooh,
there you go.
Might be onto something. So this one was really occasioned by a blog post that was going around in the Discord a couple weeks ago.
Okay.
From a guy named Michael Stoppelberg in Switzerland, who just upgraded to 25 gigabit internet service.
What the hell do you do with 25 gigabit internet service?
He addresses that, among other things, in this blog. Also, apparently, he is the author of the i3 window manager. Tiling window manager.
Oh wow!
For Unix likes, he says in his blog post that when the ISP tech showed up to install his 25 gigabit internet, the tech recognized him. He was like, "Oh wow, you wrote my window manager."
Wow.
Anyway, I don't want it for the download. Here's why I want it. I just want a reason to have to build a router that can handle 25 gigabits. That's the actual reason.
Okay.
That's the actual reason I want faster internet, is I just want an excuse to build a router that can handle it.
But I mean, like, in order to do anything functional with that, you'd have to put like 4 different servers inside the house.
Totally. The only way you're going to get any use out of something like that, that you couldn't also do with 1 gigabit, is to run a bunch of symmetric stuff. Like, you're not going to get like a gigabyte a second from a single download source, right?
Yeah, I'm prepared to render a judgment on this one.
But if you're serving a bunch of stuff, or like, so you say you're downloading games from both Xbox and PlayStation at the same time, then neither one of them would be bottlenecked.
Assuming your switch between the router and the, like, the problem is like getting the network infrastructure to not bottleneck between the switch and the router is the problem.
Now you're getting it. See, I just want a problem to solve.
I just want to
architect a new network that can handle all of this stuff. And so, I have absolutely no need for it, and also no space for it.
Yeah, I mean, at that point, you're looking at like a 1U switch. Like, you're looking at like business switches that can either channel bond multiple Ethernet channels or,
So these Mellanox cards will do it. Like the one I've got has 2 40 gigabit ports on the same card. Like, that's all you need. But like, in his blog, if you look, like, he built a router that is a full size PC.
Well, yeah, I was gonna say.
To handle the speed, which is a little excessive. I mean, not that it's not appropriate for the use case. It's just like, I don't want to run a full size PC for a router.
Well, what you need is to put you just run the router in a hypervisor on your NAS.
Mm-hmm.
So the NAS is one VM. The router is another VM. You need like a Threadripper in there, mm-hmm. and you need a board with like 16 Ethernet ports.
Now you're talking, and all of this could go in a rack. And
I don't know why you would send it to a rack.
Okay. Look, I'm just going to let that one go. This one was intentionally a little flippant. Okay. I'm fully prepared to take the hit on this one. I know it's ridiculous.
I think I
don't even need the faster internet. I just look at people building cool routers and I'm like, man, I wish I had a reason to do that. But my current router is totally fine, so I don't.
I think I'm going to give you a dipshit here, but with an asterisk, which is mm-hmm. I do appreciate the attempt at problem solving. And I think you should build a PFSense router because you need more things to manage in your life.
I need something to tinker with. I need more things to tinker with. Here it comes. Oh, okay.
I wish I didn't have the Pac-Man one here. The Pac-Man didn't work apparently. So
do you think we will see more widespread faster than gigabit? I started to say in our lifetimes, but that sounds silly because that's hopefully decades and like I'm almost assuredly in decades we will. But like, do you see, because, you know, like now that they've dragged fiber all over the place, like fiber is just a matter of like putting in a new ONT and provisioning for faster speed, right? Like the actual fiber cables can handle way faster than gigabit. So like I could see faster service starting to proliferate.
Well, I mean, the bigger problem is that the infrastructure inside the house isn't going to support it. Like,
right.
Like,
yes. Like, that is where the problem solving on the user end has to come in. And obviously a lot of people probably don't care enough to deal with that.
Well, and also, I mean, it's hard to argue with gigabit when you can buy a $40 unmanaged switch that will do what you need inside the house versus, you know, a $500 managed switch that has fiber ports and a bunch of overhead and nonsense.
To be clear, I mean, in my case, at least, I probably would only hook up the NAS and my Windows PC directly to the super fast.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Everything else in the house would probably stay on gigabit, to be perfectly honest.
I mean, I would be really curious to see what actually you get. Like, Steam won't max out my connection anymore.
Really?
No,
it's variable. I started to say very variable. That's
it is
quite variable for me as well. Like sometimes it will. I've had
Epic will hit it.
Really? I don't have the best Epic, but I found Origin and Battle.net to be very fast.
Origin can make the video playback in the living room stop. It will use so much of my bandwith.
Yes.
I haven't played anything on Battle.net in ages, so I don't know.
I'll put this blog note, or I will put this blog link in the show notes so you can look at it. But he's got speed tests in here. He tested he downloaded a bunch of Linux ISOs, which everyone knows is the classic only use for fast internet.
Yeah, I mean, look,
he's got a bunch of benchmarks in here. Like he legitimately was able to hit about, he did the classic Ookla speedtest.net test and legitimately got about 23 gigabit up and down.
That's bonkers.
It is bonkers, right? I'm trying to look at, let's see, download.
I don't know that I've ever been someplace that has that kind of connection.
I'm looking at his actual numbers here. Like he, let's see, he was able to iperf at 23 gigabits.
Wow.
I'm trying to see. It doesn't have a lot of like actual download benchmark. Anyway, I'll put that in there. It's fun to think about. I don't actually need it. It's just fun to think about.
I've got one more.
Oop. Okay. All right. Let's wrap it up here.
People are mowing outside. I got to wrap it up. You know, when you're on a website and you're looking and you're like, oh, hey, if you like this article, you get to the end of the article. And it's like, hey, you might like this article. Here's some other good articles on our site. And then you click it and it's not actually an article on that site. It's just some garbage article that takes you to some clickbait site where it's just like, hey, we got to get 50 clicks out of this person to pay for the traffic that we just bought.
I am familiar with this phenomenon.
I hate those.
Like, but I mean, aren't they usually easily identifiable as not content on the same site?
I'm going to suggest that the technology improved with merging them into the content is getting better. Mm. And also the ability for my pie hole to detect them and block them has not kept up with the times, possibly because I haven't paid that much attention to it. But like going through and blocking out every outbrain domain ever helped a ton. Like I just don't see them on a lot of sites anymore.
I'm sorry, what domain?
Outbrain.
Outbrain?
Outbrain is one of the companies that is famous for doing those.
One of the leading purveyors of clickbait.
Yeah, I mean, look, so the business model on those, as somebody who had to deal with this in past lives, is we will pay a good site X number of dollars for or cents for each click of these, right? And then their goal is to get enough page views and ad impressions off of those clicks to make more money than they paid getting that click.
Yeah.
And so usually that takes the form of like, here's an article that looks like it might be interesting, but then it turns out to be a slideshow that's like 60 slides deep before you get to the thing that you were looking for. Mm-hmm. The other variant of this is the other side of this business that's also equally shitty and is serving to make Google results or search engine results basically useless, you know, because search engines tend to prefer things that are newer. Mm-hmm. So like if you search for example, hey, I want to know where to find all of the legendary spells in Elden Ring because I'm trying to get an achievement. Well, there's probably a pretty good guide on GameSpot, and there's probably a pretty good guide on IGN and like Video Games 24/7 and Eurogamer and GamesRadar, right? Then there's also a bazillion shit sites that scrape one of those sites and they just update the page every day. So theirs looks like they're constantly updating it, but it's the same thing every day. Yes, and it's a horrible pastiche of like stuff that was scraped off of other sites and maybe jammed together by a person or some bot.
Dude, that problem is widespread across numerous categories.
Yeah.
Like looking for PC hardware news, looking for like solutions to Windows problems, like all that stuff. Like I know exactly what you're talking about. It does all of this qualify as does this fall under the dark pattern?
It's kind of dark patterns and also like gaming the ad networks.
Yes. Like the algorithmic gaming or the gaming of search results with shitty algorithmic content is a huge problem in search results at this point. Like the first like two pages of stuff is just functionally useless in a lot of cases.
So yeah, like if I searched on DuckDuckGo, which mostly uses Bing results, I think, for the blue screen that I get on the stream PC. And the first seven results are they're the same headline, how to fix blah, 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 BSOD in Windows. One of them is a Microsoft thread, which kind of is the thing you want, but it's in the community site. It doesn't actually have a solution. The rest of them are these things that are like, hey, go get Driver Easy and search for Driver. Use Driver Easy on your computer. I don't know what fucking Driver Easy is. Easy is probably a disaster and I'm not going to do it.
The ones that are trying to sell closed proprietary software to fix your problems are like, ugh, I just feel slimy coming out of those.
Well, and then the rest of them are this. The system service exception in Windows 10 is a blue screen of death, parentheses, BSOD error. In this article, we'll examine the system service exception error, why it happens, what you can do to fix it, and how to stop it from happening again. And then you get a whole bunch of bullshit that mm-hmm. doesn't actually tell you how to do it and probably mm-hmm. is linking out to some bad software that's going to cause you problems and like absolute garbo sites all the way down. Anyway,
nobody is going to argue if we call this a legitimate grievance. It's one of the worst things on the web.
Yeah, the general devaluation of search over the last few years, like it's gotten to the point that I just search Reddit for stuff like this. Like if I want a PC problem fix or a game hack or game guide, I either go to IGN or GameSpot or something, or I just search the subreddit.
Yes, I am fully with you on this. Also, I'm just going to throw in as an addendum, speaking of scrolling to the bottom of articles.
Yeah.
The endless scroll.
Oh, yeah. Fuck
where,
that.
Where there is no bottom of an article, you just scroll straight into another article and then another article. Like I also a pet peeve.
I also disagree.
Look, Roadrunner is a guy who wants to get problems solved quickly, and you can't do that with a bunch of garbage search results floating to the top.
Roadrunner's got to go fast.
That's right. He's not the only one.
Do you know what else goes fast?
What's that?
Our wonderful patrons.
Yeah, wait, do they? I'm not going to disagree necessarily. I could use some justification for that statement.
I was up last night playing Elden Ring, beating Elden Ring, and I'm a little sleepy for a good segue. So you get the segue you get today.
Sometimes the words just come out.
Yeah. Like it made sense before I was saying it and during the time I was saying it. And then immediately after I was like, oh, this is a bad segue. But yeah, this is 100% listener supported podcast. If you like the show and would like us to keep making it, we would love your support. And you can find out how to do that at patreon.com/techpod. Mm-hmm. That's patreon.com/techpod, where you can join the ranks of our fabulous patrons, including our executive producer tier patrons, including Paddle Creek Games, makers of Fractured Veil, Andrew Slosky, Bunny Thorpe, Techpod Crimes, who I believe was part of a trial for 5 gigabit internet a while ago.
You know what? I would take it. I would.
Yeah, you'd be there.
Absolutely.
We're aware of your feelings. A wedge salad with tech sauce on the side.
Ooh.
I like a wedge salad. A little bacon, some blue cheese on there.
Yeah, yes.
It's like, is a wedge salad or a taco salad the least salad-y salad? I don't know.
Trying to think. Maybe like a Waldorf salad.
Waldorf has nuts. Yeah. They're good. Nuts are good for you, right?
That's true.
Jacob Chappell, Joel Krauska, a murderer of Twinkies, David Allen, and James Kamick. Thank you all so much. We really appreciate your support.
Yes, we do. Thank you.
And we appreciate everyone's support. Whether you're a part of the Patreon, whether you're in the Discord, we've had a lot of new people pop up in the Discord in the last week or two. So
yeah, it's been nice. Thanks to everyone.
Yeah, nice to see some good new faces and also the same old faces are in there too. So that's good too.
Yeah. Some returning faces.
Yeah. But we will be back next week with another episode of Brad and Will Made a Tech Pod. I guess you should, if you haven't listened to it already, you should check out this week's Foss Pod or last week's Foss Pod. Now it's about our favorite open source software picks for like replacing things such as Adobe products and other bits of software that you maybe don't have to pay for anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. Like going over a lot of kind of prominent open source creative software like Audacity and Blender and the GNU image manipulation program, but also like getting into some tips and tricks for VLC and talked about Ear Trumpet and WinMerge and some other fun open source stuff that might increase your productivity.
Yep. Rad software. We'll be back next week. Thanks for listening, everybody. Have a good week.